If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on Earth.
All things safe. Repetitive ways insane.
And good morning. You're listening to All Things Sane here on WSIC. Today, broadcasting, I'm from in Raleigh. My guest, as you will find if you're watching right now, is on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill, where I was last night watching a UNC Charlotte, UNC baseball game. Things were pretty clear on campus when I went out there, saw the chancellor. I saw, got to see Coach Davis, which is a thrill. And then watch I won't say a great baseball game. UNC Charlotte 49ers apparently didn't make the road trip, and someone else has stole their uniforms. But nevertheless, congratulations to UNC. They put on a clinic. But joining me today is Dave Bullock. He's running for state auditor. Good friend, longtime friend. You might have something, Dave, to say about what's happening at Chapel Hill right now, because it looks pretty serene behind you. I see the American flag. It all looks well. What's happening there?
Well, Representative Sane, appreciate you having me on the show today. I purposely came out to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and I'm on the quad. And those of you watching can see over my left shoulder is the American flag, proudly flying on the campus of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where I know the prevailing wisdom is that the liberals run the show and that they've gone haywire. But let me tell you, there's a new day in Chapel Hill and across our campuses in North Carolina. We have a strong interim chancellor in Lee Roberts, who personally walked through a Palestinian crazed mob yesterday afternoon who had taken down the American flag, and he personally raised the American flag back up on the flagpole that is just behind me on my shoulder. That's what's called leadership. That's what we need in North Carolina. That's the new North Carolina on our university campuses, Representative Sane.
Well, it's refreshing. And with all the turmoil and everything else that's happening on campuses everywhere else, to see that our interim chancellor, Lee Roberts, took charge, made every student feel safe so that no one was infringed upon as far as their access to on campus or even just, quite frankly, feeling threatened. Much different scene at Columbia, much different scene across the country. But at UNC Chapel Hill, I think our interim chancellor, Lee Roberts, made the right call. Pretty powerful photos. I was seeing some yesterday as events were taking place. Saw some fraternity come in, help shield the chancellor, as did our security there, our police force there at UNC Chapel Hill. But what a sight to see. And in one of the pictures, it looked like rocks were being thrown at the guys in the fraternity.
Well, that's true. And the fine men and women of our university police force really stepped up to the plate, along with the Orange County Sheriff's Department, which came in to aid the university police, as well as university police from UNC Charlotte, your alma mater, Appalachian State, North Carolina State, and North Carolina Central. They were on scene to help clear the encampment that had illegally popped up on the university. Of course, many of your listeners may know I've been chair of the board here, as you're aware. I'm still on the board, maintain chairmanship of Budget and Finance Committee, maintain constant contact yesterday with Chancellor Roberts. He maintained contact with us. I think he heard from our board, and of course, he personally had the same motivation to clear the campus, make this a safe environment for everybody. There's no room for anti-Semitism on our university campuses.
Well said. I couldn't agree with you anymore. It is, again, amazing where we're at in the world we're at these days. But it's also very refreshing to see that there are adults in the room. We're going to allow free speech to happen. That's certainly always allowed on our college campuses, especially on our college campuses. But it comes with a price, and that price is this: that's making sure that everyone has the ability to freely associate, to freely move about, and to freely express their opinions. And with, as you correctly point out, an illegal encampment, the chancellor couldn't stand for that, and shouldn't stand for that. The chancellor at UNC Charlotte a couple of weeks ago had something very similar. I think it was last week. Not nowhere near the size, but nevertheless, made sure that that wasn't going to happen. So when you mentioned our police forces from the various campuses were there, they do know how to deal with this. And UNC system is going to behave better than the others. We're going to be an example of how to do it right versus how to do it wrong, as you see across the nation. Some of the other places that are, quite frankly, allowing students to be attacked because of who they are and their ideals. But that's not going to happen here. And I just elated that you chose. We were already planning for you to be on the show, but that what a great location for you to do this from. Because it is so pertinent, and people need to know it. Police charged 36 of the Gaza Solidarity protesters yesterday that were there at that tent encampment.
That's right. And, you know, we have dealt with that at our board meetings because they disrupted board meetings. And I've had to admonish protesters and tell them that, you know, public meetings can't be interrupted. And you're subject to arrest. And we did for a long time have compliance when asked to leave. But, you know, over the weekend, it sort of escalated. It's a lot of outside agitators funded by far left groups, mainly from New York and from overseas, that are paying organizers to ramp up and radicalize students on our campus. And we got to put a stop to it.
Well, that's an excellent point. We were talking yesterday at the legislature, a few of my colleagues, about where funding comes from. How do these groups who want to seem somewhat disorganized, as if it's some type of grassroots sentiment that's growing? The fact of the matter is, these are many times paid activists, but they're certainly professional activists, whether they're paid or not. They show up. They have a network that, you know, it's a ready-made squad, if you will, that comes out and forms a protest. So this is not necessarily from UNC students. By and large, there might be some engaged in this, but by and large, to your point, you know, the UNC campus, one's a beautiful campus, and it's got wonderful people, and a lot of different folks come from UNC. I always tell people when they say, well, would you let your kid go to Chapel Hill? I say, absolutely. I said, the people that I know that went in conservative come out even more conservative. They get to see sometimes why they disagree, but they must always do it in an agreeable fashion. And so again, it's a different campus. And people, you know, when you hear these things, though, they might get a different idea of what happens at Chapel Hill. But you're a grad, been chair of the board, you know a lot about it. We got about a minute, but tell us a little bit on a normal day, what's Chapel Hill like?
Chapel Hill's just a great place. I mean, it's welcoming of all ideology, you know, and we'll get into it maybe in one of the next breaks, you know. We've instituted something called the School of Civic Life and Leadership here, which is an effort to balance the professorate and ideological views. I'm telling you, it is a vibrant place. It's a big economic engine for the state of North Carolina as well. UNC Chapel Hill, UNC Charlotte, NC State, and all the campuses, huge economic engines.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break, because I think that is something that we're going to talk about your run for state auditor too, so we won't miss that. But we've got another 45 minutes yet. But we'll get to those things, because I do think it's very important. And you've got a bit of knowledge that maybe folks don't know, don't realize, and love to share with our audience. You're listening to All Things Sane here on WSIC, broadcasting from Raleigh today and Chapel Hill. My guest is Dave Bullock. He's running for state auditor. It's great to have him on, longtime friend. But we'll be back in just a few minutes. If you're on I-77, you might see a patriotic display right now of an American flag. Just got something sent to me. We'll be right back.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
All things safe. Representative Jason Safe.
We've got fun and games. We got everything you want, honey. We know the names. We are the people.
And welcome back to All Things Sane. You know, welcome to the jungle. At least that's the way it was yesterday morning at UNC Chapel Hill. But this morning is a much different morning as the sun came up. The protesters had taken down the U.S. flag at one point yesterday. And our interim chancellor, Lee Roberts, did a fabulous job by walking out with student support and with the backup of some guys know how to handle a rough crowd, and men and women who know how to handle a tough crowd, and took care of business, got the flag back up, has restored peace to the university. It was short-lived, and got rid of an illegal encampment. Who knows where they'll go next, but at least for now, they're not on campus there at Chapel Hill. Joining me today is Dave Bullock. He's running for our North Carolina State Auditor. He's got a primary coming up here in just a couple of weeks. Welcome to the show, Dave. If you missed our first segment, go back. You want to listen to that for sure, because he shared a very unique perspective of things going on at Chapel Hill. And Dave, tell us again, give us your background.
Yeah, thanks. So I am a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill, and you had mentioned in the last segment about conservatives at UNC Chapel Hill. I'd point out, on our ticket in the fall, we've got some graduates of UNC Chapel Hill who are on the ticket. Michelle Morrow, our nominee for the DPI, she's a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill, as is Luke Farley, and as is Brad Briner. And I'm hoping to join them as well. So that shows that there is a conservative movement coming from our university system. But my background is, yes, I went here. I also earned a law degree and a master's in business administration from Campbell University. Took that to work in business at first. I ran a government contracting firm that was nationwide from San Diego on the naval station there to Fort Hood to Fort Bragg and Fayetteville, where I managed contracts on behalf of service companies for the Department of Defense. Left that position and actually was a grassroots worker opposing Hillary Clinton's government health plan back in the day. So I traveled the Southeast U.S. doing that. And then I decided I would put my law degree to work, and I became a prosecutor. So I've been in traffic court, and I've handled murder cases and everything in between. So I've been able to investigate things, get to the bottom of it, see things through. I've got a wonderful wife of the last 28 years, be 29, Jason, in a couple of weeks. And I've got the date inscribed on my ring so I don't forget.
Very smart.
We've got four great kids. You know, I've got one that graduated from here, another one that lives actually in New York City and works there. And he's a good Christian young man who leads a Bible study in the heart of Manhattan. So we're proud of our two that are off the family payroll. And then I've got two other kids at home. I'm a Christian who was born and raised a Christian, Jason, but didn't really develop what I would describe and feel as a personal relationship with Jesus Christ until about 18 years ago, when I was blessed enough to go on a retreat. Some friends invited me to a retreat at Camp Dixie in Bladen County, North Carolina, and found Christ in a face-to-face setting and have tried to walk in his footsteps ever since that day. That's my background. I practiced law and, of course, been the chair of the board here, worked on reforms, and I hope we have a chance to talk about those reforms, because that really is the jumping off point of why in the world I think I ought to be state auditor and why in the world I would even want to seek the job.
Well, you know, everyone who runs for office, you sometimes have to ask for a head check, because you put yourself out there and of course, anything and everything you've ever done comes up, and even some of the things you didn't do. You know, that's how you roll. And for those who are dedicated and want to make an improvement to our state, to our communities, I mean, that's the call. And you've heard that call and many times in your life, and this is another place to do that. So when is the election? Early voting's already started, isn't that right?
Yeah, early voting is going on right now. So in most counties, it is at their county board of elections. In Mecklenburg County, I think there's four or five spots. In the 13th congressional district, which is contested, that 13th race between Brad Knott and Kelly Daughtry, several of the counties have additional voting, early voting sites because of a little bit larger than normal turnout in those areas. But primarily, it'll be at your local county board of elections. And I'm sure that's the case, for example, in Lincoln County and Cabarrus County. So go vote now. And then on May 14th, you'll be at your normal precinct site. And for most folks, there's two races on the ballot, lieutenant governor and state auditor. And, you know, Jason, we owe a debt of gratitude, really, to the candidates who put themselves out there in these two races. Two very important races, and I'll focus on the state auditor's race. We had six candidates, and I would say a vast majority of those candidates qualified for the job. And in the past, the Republican Party has not had, quite frankly, qualified candidates step up to be willing and to be financed enough to take on Democratic incumbent. And so we all owe a great debt of gratitude to everyone who stepped up in that race, because it's also focused and shown a light. You know, Jeff Tart, who's state senator, he was one of those candidates, good friend of mine, good friend of yours, you know, very qualified for the job, and stepping up like that and shining a light on this important race. I think the state auditor's race, quite frankly, has gotten more attention because of the Republican primary this cycle than it has in very recent history. I mean, I just think a lot of people are interested in it now.
Well, I think you're right. To point that out, for so long, Republicans, if they could compete, it might be at the top of the ticket, a governor's race or a lieutenant governor's race. Sheree Berry kind of breaking through with Commissioner of Labor back in the day, and then she got settled in, became a fixture, so folks were used to voting for a Republican there. And then Steve Troxler, our ag commissioner, but some of these other races, folks haven't been really paying as much attention to, which I think, with a state that's growing, with a state that has a good Republican base to pull from, and showing day in and day out that we can be the party that can govern. We don't have to have split government between the parties. We've got qualified Republicans. For years, I think you could make the argument that we maybe didn't run enough qualified people for some of those positions, to your point. But now we do, and now voters have a choice. And, when it comes down to a runoff, that says there were a lot of Republicans that, saw a lot in different people who were running. Mm-hmm. But it's down to two now. And you're looking to take that state auditor's position. You've got a great background and really everything you've done throughout your life. But it's a big state. How are you holding up as you make the treks? I know it's long days and long nights.
It is big state, but I'll tell you what, it's a beautiful state. And I had the privilege just this past Saturday to start my day in Kings Mountain, North Carolina, in Gaston County, Cleveland County, right on the Gaston Cleveland line there. Went all the way out to Waynesville, to the high mountains, the high southern mountains of North Carolina. Was able to see Senator Heiss and Representative Chuck Edwards, and was able to meet with them and talk to them and speak to the 11th Congressional District there. Then left there, went back to Gastonia for Speaker Moore's event, which is the 14th Congressional District. Was able to spend some time with him and the constituents in the 14th District. Then left there and went to Marshville, which is in Union County, and was able to spend time with Mark Harris, who's the presumptive congressman. He's the Republican nominee in the 8th District. Was able to spend time with him and the constituency there. And then, Jason, we kept going east to Lumberton, which, yes, Robeson County has been a Democrat stronghold. Senator Danny Britt, who I know is a friend of yours, Representative Jared Lowry, one of your colleagues in the House. They're both Republicans from Robeson County. When Danny Britt first ran in Robeson County, 76% of the vote was Democrat in Robeson County. Today, it's 47%. And you can attribute a lot of that to Danny, Jared, and President Trump's visit to Robeson County during the 2016 election cycle.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, the excitement with Trump back in 2016 certainly started to kind of lit the fire over there. And we've gotten, like to your point, we've gotten some great folks in the legislature that come from that area now, which we never had before. Jared Lowry serves very well in our caucus. I just did an event for him. He's out raising funds for his reelection and also raising funds for our caucus. He's doing the Lord's work. He was out. He and I ran on the trail way out of either one of our districts. But we started a fan club, and folks wanted us to come out and do the events. But then Danny Britt, I mean, to your point, I mean, really just some would say, almost out of nowhere, or at least almost overnight, maybe a better way to say it, jumps in, becomes the senator, North Carolina senator from there, and doing a great job. And it's great to see. And that kind of excitement, which is also what's happening within, as we look at these statewide races that you're running in. While folks, when they had that change of heart there in Robeson County, it really made a difference and made an impact in the presidential race, will make an impact in our governor's race and make an impact in the auditor's race, for sure.
Absolutely. Made a big difference, Jason, in Dan Bishop's run for Congress as well, because he currently represents that the old 8th district down there that is Robeson County is part of, and they really helped put him over the top. So he owes a lot of gratitude and has said so to the Robeson County in eastern North Carolina.
Well, like anything else in business or in life or anything else, I always say if you're not growing, you're dying. Sometimes that's spiritually, sometimes that's from an educational standpoint, but from a party standpoint, we're growing rapidly in North Carolina. And it means that folks really like our policies. We're talking with Dave Bullock. He's running for North Carolina State Auditor. He's on the campus of Chapel Hill. We're over his shoulder. You can see a lot of peace and tranquility. And while he's been talking, you could even hear the birds in the trees. So it sounds like a beautiful morning in Chapel Hill. We'll be back right after the break as you listen to All Things Sane here on WSIC. Thanks for listening.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
All Things Sane with Representative Jason Sane.
And good morning. You listen to All Things Sane here on WSIC, or you may be joining us on the podcast or watching us live even. But however you join us, however you hear us, we welcome you always each week. Love to have folks listening. Get your updates here. Interesting right now in Raleigh, just because we're getting started in the short session process, which will produce some budget corrections from the big budget last year. Moving around of some funds, making sure that things get expended as the way they should, saving money where we can. We ended up with the surplus. If you don't understand the surplus, a lot of that is from the economic activity. So the couple of cents when you purchase something on each dollar goes into the general fund. And sometimes, we collect more than we anticipated because there's better economic activity. And that's a great place to be. But it also makes it complicated when you're a budget chair. But nevertheless, joining us today, I won't burden you with my problems right now. I'd rather share with you the good news for our state auditor candidate, Dave Bullock. He's running. He's got a primary. You can vote now. You go to your local board of elections, or in some of the bigger areas, you might have a few more options. But nevertheless, you can check your board of elections website. But to be sure, you can always vote at your board of elections. So in the early voting process. And because it is a second primary, Dave, it's probably harder to get people out and get them excited about voting. But you're traversing the state, as you were sharing with us, and trying to speak to folks as one on one when you can.
We are, and we're was telling you off during the break. We're going to be heading to Alamance County, Burlington tomorrow. We'll be in Wilmington tomorrow night. And then we'll have a full slate on Friday as well as Saturday. I'll be in Eden with Senator Berger and Representative Reese Pirtle early morning on Saturday, and then I'll be back in Fayetteville, and then off to Cabarrus County for the Lincoln Reagan dinner in Cabarrus County on Saturday night. So it'll be a full day of campaigning. I enjoy it. I like to meet people where they are. Let them know about me, and they love to question me about what in the world does the state auditor do and why should I care? And I love to tell that story.
Well, and it matters because people, care when they know how much you care, for sure. And I was joking, it's a big, big state. I know this because one of my first jobs ever in politics, Mayor Richard Binder of Charlotte ran for governor in 1996. And ultimately lost the primary to Robin Hayes, who I then went to work for. So I know both men think the world of both of them, but Richard was a great mentor. But I would get up. I lived in Charlotte at the time, having just graduated UNC Charlotte a couple months before. And I'd get up early in the morning, get down to he and Judy's house. And Judy just passed, by the way, for those who don't know. Yeah. Richard would be up and sprite and ready to go, and he would be the same guy all day. He was a machine, and I'd just drive him wherever. And I had the great benefit of sitting in rooms with people having discussions that was a lot of fun. That's how if kids still understood what a Rolodex was, that's how I built my Rolodex, meeting people all across the state. And you're doing the same thing, and it's so fun to do. I'll tell you a story since you're a Chapel Hill guy. And that Richard was too, or is too, I should say. and play basketball for Dean Smith. So when we would go on campus, Dean was still there, had an office on campus. And we'd every now and then, you know, slip in and spend time with Coach. And, you know, that was more than anything of the experience of politics, just to be sitting in a room with a living legend like that. And then the folks who would drop in while we were there, once upon a time, a guy named Michael Jordan just happened through the door and I wanted to fall out of my chair. So you get to meet some of the coolest people and interact, and you just never know what each day is going to bring.
I get to be on your radio show, Jason.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of people. It's a line that want to come in and get on the show. So you beat them to it. But that's it. I mean, you're sharing what you're doing with as many people as you can, and that's pretty exciting. It can wear you out some days, I know, but you just get up next day and put on a fresh face.
But I love talking about the state auditor's office, and you know. And you're well aware and steeped in what the auditor does and can do. And what I tell people is it's really an important and underappreciated office. You know, there's three types of audits actually that the auditor can perform. And one is what you would think is sort of the bread and butter. It's the financial and accountability audits and compliance audits. That's the type of thing that's day-to-day for the state auditor's office, looking at state agencies, taking direction oftentimes from the legislature, from the budget chair, from Jason Sain on ideas of places that may need to be audited, and that's routine for the office. Where I think our auditor's office has not done as good a job is with the other two types of audits, and those are economy and efficiency audits. I mean, Jason, I know that you and the legislature want our state government to be customer friendly, and you appropriated to Governor Cooper's administration and Wayne Goodwin over at the DMV north of $90 million to help with that effort. But I mean, can I get an amen that the DMV needs to be audited for efficiency and economy? To that. I mean, that is going to be day one. And I have. And there's two schools of thoughts on the state auditor. One, that you shouldn't talk about certain things. But you know what? I think the voters need and deserve an opportunity to know what I want to do. And I want to give them an opportunity to hold me accountable. So DMV is going to be top of the list. I'll tell you, the legislature's also done some really good work on election integrity. But I do believe that the state auditor's office is uniquely situated to assist with election integrity in our state. And a lot of that goes to giving the public confidence in their elections, because if the public doesn't have confidence, they tend not to vote. And so I think, for example, these voter rolls, there's an area where the state auditor's office can take an active role and begin scrubbing to give people confidence that folks can't vote twice and that the voter rolls are accurate. And finally, and I know you've paid close attention to these things, and that is these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations. When the legislature appropriates money to nonprofits and other organizations to do things on behalf of the state, once that money's out the door, it's out the door. I think it's incumbent upon the state auditor's office to drill down on those NGOs to make sure that the money is being spent as directed by the legislature. And quite frankly, you know, I've committed and I'm committed to making sure that these NGOs are not spending money on people who are in North Carolina illegally, so that taxpayer dollars are not supporting. You know, President Trump has said it, and I agree, that every state is a border state. And that's one area where I believe that the state auditor's office can work to protect our border.
Well, amen to that. Amen and amen and amen. I'll just say it. It is what people expect. I mean, nothing can rile me up more to realize that, one, the state has wasted money, and two, done so, and the waste is not, it's not that it's intentional, it's just built into a system that refuses to change. And to your point, you have to approach it from a business mindset. It's government, it's different than business, I get that. But you have to have a business mindset that says, hey, how are we going to get the most efficient product possible for the people who are paying the bills? Because that's really the real offense here, is that people work hard, you know, they pay taxes, they do the right thing. Hopefully the more they make, it means the more the state collects, because they're successful, we're successful. We've tried to put an emphasis on that, making sure that folks have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we believe that if we if we don't regulate you too much, we don't tax you too much, you've got that opportunity. And so, but then at the end of the day, once you've paid that bill, to go see the money wasted is a real heartbreak for folks. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean somebody's doing anything wrong. It's just they're not doing anything right. They're not getting it there. And
you're spot on. You are spot on, Jason. And I'll say that third type of audit, I mentioned economy and efficiency, and you hit on it. That third type of audit is program results. You know, yeah. The Legislative Oversight Committee does what they can, but, you know, a true partnership with the State Auditor's Office can really reap benefits on asking the one simple question, and that is, what kind of return are taxpayers getting for this particular program? And if you can't answer that question in a way that benefits taxpayers, or if you answer it in a way where we find duplicative services across agencies and across NGOs, you know, I think it's incumbent upon a state auditor to do more than just come up with the numbers. It's to present recommendations to you in the Legislative Oversight Committee, to Governor, hopefully Governor Robinson, in the governor's mansion, to say this program is not benefiting the taxpayers, needs to be defunded, because quite frankly, as you know, we got potholes to fill and bridges to build in this state.
No, that's exactly right. And I look, you couldn't have said it any better. It's particularly a great point this morning. Started my morning sitting in a budget meeting, quite frankly, getting confusing and conflicting information. But what mostly we understood from the department we were looking at was really just not getting it done in time to get out the federal money that we received during all this ARP and COVID and everything else. We're talking with Dave Bullock. We'll be back in just a moment here on WSIC. He's running for state auditor. Glad to have you listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Things Sane. We're here on a Wednesday. I'm broadcasting from Raleigh. I've got with me on the line and on live feed, I've got Dave Bullock. He's running for state auditor, and he is standing right there in Chapel Hill at UNC Chapel Hill, enjoying a nice serene morning with the American flag as a backdrop. It was returned to where it should be yesterday by our interim chancellor, Lee Roberts, surrounded by kids who, quite frankly, believe in this country and believe in what our system stands for. Quite frankly, what our university system stands for, and that's freedom of academic thought, which was great to see, and to really literally plant a flag and see it yesterday. So mm-hmm. See it happen. But you were traveling the state, but you have arrived at one of the most beautiful places you could do this broadcast from, Dave.
Well, I wanted to do it on purpose to let people know that things are back to normal and that we are not going to back down to radicals who want to take over our system and who want to basically overthrow and change our system of government and the way that we live our lives here, not only in North Carolina, but across the country.
That's exactly right. I mean, a lot of these folks, I said it in the earlier segment, whether paid or not, are professional activists, and they're quite frankly they're Marxists, and they're out there trying to change our way of government, and we're not going to stand for that. I know at Chapel Hill though, we're implementing. You know, it's important to know where you're coming from and how we got to where we're at, and what our society is really all about, and what our government's really about. And so there's a new project going on at Chapel Hill now.
There is, and that's one of the. Couple of things have moved the needle here in Chapel Hill. And we often talk about it, and you and I have even talked about it offline. It's like turning a battleship 5 degrees at a time, but we've got to bring balance back to our university system. In my role here at Chapel Hill, which is my jumping off point to run for state auditor and statewide office, we started with the budget. There were 16 separate budgets running a $4.4 billion annual spend when I first joined the board here at UNC. And myself and colleagues on the board led the effort to consolidate that to one budget. We discovered a $100 million annual structural deficit that we cleaned up in 13 months, and now we're running a slight surplus. And as you know, that budget model has been implemented system-wide. So, you know, that's one thing I'm very proud of, the work that we've done here at Chapel Hill to bring fiscal responsibility to our university system. Additionally, January of last year, I introduced as chair of the board something called the School of Civic Life and Leadership. I went on Fox News and said that it was an effort to remedy the imbalance of liberal faculty on our campus and to bring some conservative professors on campus and to build a home for conservative students where they feel like they can not have to hide their ideology. I was fought tooth and nail, including from the accreditors, the bureaucratic accreditors in Washington, D.C., and Representative Virginia Fox, who is chair of the Education Subcommittee in the House of Representatives, came to my rescue and beat them off of me. And then the liberal faculty here at Chapel Hill told me it would never happen. And thanks to your leadership in the General Assembly on the House side, we got seed money. And in the fall, we're going to hold classes. Told me it couldn't get done, but we got it done. And that's sort of the type of leadership I want to bring statewide to the auditor's office, which is a get it done mentality. And then 2.5 weeks ago, I announced, as you're well aware, that we're going to strip DEI out of the budget here at the university. I think it's the most divisive thing in recent history, Jason.
I tell you, from my district, they don't want much from state government, right? There's not a lot that we're blessed in that, and we really are, and we recognize that. But one of the biggest concerns I hear from parents and from kids who are now in school, your kids that are younger than me, but kids who are in school at some of these campuses, and say kind of report back in about how this DEI kind of, I mean, I think you framed it best, that kind of ideology is permeating. Yeah. And that's not what folks expect. They do expect everyone to be treated equally. They do expect, you know, to see a diverse student body. We have that. And so there's more to it than just as the surface, you know, as folks who are on the left try to talk about it. It is a much bigger game plan. It doesn't have a place in our system, and I'm glad you're committed to fighting that with us, and we're going to, and you've done a lot on that, and so thank you for that.
Well, we're ripping the Band-Aid off to lead the way, plow the field, got to strip it from the budget. It creates a bureaucratic infrastructure that really does, to the point I made in the last segment, I don't think it brings a return to taxpayer investment. And the legislature has been so generous. We are the envy of the rest of the nation, the way that you and the legislature and the General Assembly on the House and Senate side generously fund our public institutions. At UNC Chapel Hill alone, it's $760+ million a year. We couldn't have the fantastic research and economic engine creation, innovation that's going on at this university and at UNC Charlotte and at NC State, App State, Wilmington, across the system. We wouldn't have that without the generous support of the General Assembly. But that begs the question, you know, whose money does that actually represent? Well, it represents a broad spectrum of North Carolina taxpayers. So all taxpayers should expect to be able to send their children and their grandchildren to our universities without them having to come in here and fear being ostracized because they may have an ideological viewpoint that doesn't necessarily comport with a far left liberal professor.
Well, and to that end, I mean, we're talking about what economic engines our university system, and quite frankly, our community college system as well, our K-12 system is for our state. Generating smart, ready to go to work people is the goal here, so that they're well educated enough that we get to either one, bring a lot of homegrown ideas and turn them into something that's profitable. And I mean, when I say profitable, I mean from a personal standpoint, from a way to employ people, from all of it, for the state to enjoy even more prosperity because of the work of our people, and to also attract folks and businesses from elsewhere. When people see the good work we're doing, they come in droves. We're a growing state, and we're growing because we know what the formula of success looks like. And those who are trying to change that formula, quite frankly, are messing with our economic prowess as a leader across this nation. And leaders like you and I we're just not going to stand for it.
You're not going to stand for it. And I would point to our strong community college system. as a real driver of employment and future success of North Carolina, I would say it's really, really important. But, you know, Jason, to your point, and I'm running for state auditor, I do believe that these council of state positions, much like positions in the legislature, above anything, they require courage. They require people who are willing to step up, go in, serve, and have courage to do what's right. And that's what I believe that I bring to the table. Look, I will tell you and your listeners, and I've told you this, and I'll tell your listeners this, that I'm not anticipating showing up at the state auditor's office with a Ziploc bag full of number two pencils and a calculator. I'm going there to get things done. I'm a fighter. I want to get results. We're going to plow to the end of the road, and we're going to make sure that taxpayers, number one, do not lose money on inefficiency, and we're going to fight corruption and fraud where it exists. We're going to give it, hopefully, to a Republican attorney general in Dan Bishop to prosecute, and individual prosecutors across the state if there's malfeasance, you know, and if there's misfeasance, we're going to go in, take corrective action, and help. I can point to the Durham Public Schools where our current state auditor, who's a Cooper appointee, has failed to show up on the front door. They've got a $60+ million hole that the not only does their school board not want to tell people about, but their administration is silent on. I think it's incumbent upon the state auditor to develop a strike force to take care of those things. That's an area right there where the taxpayers need an active state auditor who has leadership abilities. You know, and I've done it, Jason, and you know, I've stood up to the woke left and the limousine liberals, as I call them, and I told them no on Nicole Hannah-Jones in the 1619 Project, because I don't think CRT has any business being promoted in our university system, or for that matter, in our secondary schools.
Well, absolutely right. You've got a record at fighting these. It's not just an election year and all of a sudden you got religion. You've been doing this for a long, long time. And that kind of dedication is how you get results and understanding. I think you said it best when you talk about moving the ship. You don't move it fast. And we're fighting the odds are against us in a lot of cases. But people staying in the fray and fighting end up getting good results in the long run. And I know you'll do that and get some quick results too, because you guys like you and I have been waiting for a long time to finally get to some of these things and to take care of them. When you talk about the authority of an auditor looking at what's happening in a city or county somewhere, that's the role of state government in our state. We're a Dillon Rule state. I mean, the state is supreme to all other bodies, whether it be a county commission, whether it be a city council, whether it be a school board, and then going through and making it right for the people who live there. Because if they're getting that type of treatment, it's not fair, and they deserve it. Dave Bowie, you're running for state auditor. You're in Chapel Hill today. It's been great to have you on the show. We've got about maybe 30 seconds. I'll give you the last 30 seconds.
Well, as I said before, if you want somebody that's going to go into the state auditor's office and just crunch numbers and give numerical results, don't vote for me, because that's not what I'm about. I'm a fighter who wants to go in and take a hard look at how taxpayer money is spent and how taxpayer money is wasted. I want to fix it on behalf of the state for all our citizens to help make this state an even better place than it is today. It's the best state in the world, in my opinion.
Amen to that.
In the country
amen.
To live in.
Well, appreciate that. Dave Bowen, thanks for being on the show today. Thanks for listening to All Things Sane. We'll be back next week.